Thank you. And thanks for letting a botanist in the building. That was very kind of you. I'm from Sydney. I want to talk about some of the ways we like to use molecular tools on target weeds, especially ones that are under biocontrol research. And sort of the rationale for using these molecular tools is a few questions that might pop up. Do you need taxonomic clarification? Do you need to know the weed origins, which certainly will be important for highly host-specific biocontrol agents for finding them? Host specificity studies should include pretty much what genetic diversity there is in the invasion. You can't have it all, but it would be nice to at least have the most common genotypes that are invading included in host specificity studies. Is there any population structure in an invasion? Does one region have one genotype and one region's got another genotype, or are they all mixed up through the invasion? And is there any hybridization going on, which is often cryptic? The first example, I'm going to give you two examples today. The first one pretty much includes just host specificity studies and population structure, and then I have an example about hybridization coming up. And the first one's rush skeleton weed. If you're from Nevada, you don't see this. There it is right there. I'm working with Lynn Kenter, Mark Schwartzlander, Laura Parsons, and a few others on this project. And skeleton weeds in the family Asteraceae. It's from Europe and Western Asia, and it's pretty much named for not having a lot of leaves on it, right? And the big invasions up here in the Northwest is pretty much Idaho's worst weed, and there are some smaller populations out east, and it's in California. If you're driving home to California on I-80, stop at the Penryn exit, get out of your car, and you'll be with yellow star thistle and rush skeleton weed. It's apomictic, so that's immaculate conception for this plant. It doesn't need sex, and all of the seeds that are developed are identical to the mother plant. And they think that's throughout the invasion, that's what we see. They think some native pops in Europe are diploid and could be sexual, and it spreads by seed and rhizome. And I'll just give you a quickie, there it is, 1930. This is Washington and Wyoming there in Oregon. Sorry, I'm not showing California or Nevada. But it showed up in Spokane in 1945. And we'll skip to 2001, and it's pretty much throughout the region there. Gets into Montana, does show up in Wyoming. I heard it's near Elko, and certainly in California, and I'll show you that. So the main takeaway from that is in Idaho, it went from 20 hectares in the 1960s to 1.4 million hectares in the 1980s. So a good spread for that weed. And California got it a bit later. And Montana, we just got it in the 90s, and British Columbia got it in the 90s. And just a few pictures, there it is with in some sagebrush communities right there. There it is going all the way up the hillside near Banks, Idaho, all the green here, except for the tragopogon. And it likes abandoned pastures, and here it is out sort of near Boise, these bigger bushes out in the field. And Australia's got it too. It's a big problem down there. This is sort of the black is the current distribution in Australia. And this is Eastern Australia. They, of course, have had drought issues. This is a wheat field, dry land wheat. Everything green in there is rush skeleton weed all the way back. Everything sort of brown is the wheat. So the skeleton weed's doing well there. In Western Australia, they don't have so much of it, and they are spending $3.5 million a year to eradicate it in their wheat growing areas. So they're pretty serious about it because they don't have this kind of numbers of the plants. There has been biocontrol on it back in the 70s, a midge, and now there's a moth, Brataroa, which didn't work well in Australia, and they're trying to work on it here. Mark Schwartzlander's trying to get the numbers up for that one, see how they do. But more importantly, there was a rust and a gall mite that were sort of the most effective things going on in the US. Interestingly enough, certain forms of skeleton weed are resistant to these two biocontrol agents. And when I say forms of skeleton weed, what do I really mean? Well, here in the US, we say there are different biotypes described by their height, location, when they flower. So we might be talking about the tall one that flowers early or the one that's from near Banks, Idaho. That's how we're describing biotypes right now in the US. Australia describes biotypes too, and they do it with pretty much the width of the rosette and the leaf width in the rosette. That's how they've described their three morphotypes down there. So if we already have these biotypes and we understand these forms, why do we care what genotypes are out there? Well, genotyping is a little more objective and exact than morphological measurements, which vary over time, vary with the rainfall. They don't vary too much, but they can vary, and when they flower can vary. And there were earlier enzyme studies found three U.S. enzyme types and three in Australia, but enzymes usually aren't as variable as something as like AFLPs or microsatellites or ISSRs. So you can get a lot better resolution of what's out there and maybe find more of the genotypes if you're using some of these molecular methods. And genotyping can really help us find exact origins. If you want to go to turkey and you think you're looking for the tall one that flowers early, it's going to be difficult in the field. And we can use the genotypes to compare invasions between other countries. Argentina's got it also, certainly Australia and the USA. So we can all talk and maybe share some information. So for the US, we went out and got, a lot of people sent me about 721 plants for AFLPs. And we found only seven genotypes or clones. It's apomictic. That makes sense. It's not having sex, but only seven clones in the USA. And this is where they are. The darker states are the ones you would expect to find it in. And each dot is a population. And some of the things you can get for a little takeaway from this is California has only one genotype, genotype 3, anywhere you go in California. And Idaho, southern Idaho, everything's genotype 1 except for two plants I found, a genotype 2 and a genotype 3. And up in the Spokane area, you find everything. Genotypes 1, 2, 3, 3A, 1A's nearby. And that makes sense because we think that's the origin of the invasion. And out east, where you don't find a lot anymore, it seems to be disappearing, unlike the west, some different genotypes, genotype 8 and 9 out there. So this area got invaded earlier than we did, but they seem to have different genotypes. Australia, if you go down there, we looked at about 267 plants, and they were right. Whereas we found more genotypes using our AFLPs than they had found using enzyme studies in the USA, we only found three genotypes, just like the three enzyme types they found in Australia. All of the three genotypes that are in Australia are different from the USA. So if you're looking at highly host-specific biocontrol agents, you have some issues there, and you can't really share agents, those agents very well between these continents. They thought that one of their genotypes was eradicated by the rust, but we find genotype 5, 6, and 7 pretty much in equal numbers throughout this wheat-growing area of Australia. So we're working and talking with them about that. If we go to Western Australia, where the plant's a little more rare, we looked at 60 of the plants. They thought they only had one genotype by looking at their rosette morphology, but we found genotypes 5 and 6 pretty much in equal numbers, and genotype 7 was out there. One other note, these 5, 6, and 7, these were pretty much in equal numbers throughout Australia. So apparently they haven't gotten rid of one of their genotypes. Laura Parsons, a UIdaho grad student, looked at, well, okay, are these, certainly you have these morphological characters that you look at to sort of say, what's my biotype? Do those correlate with the genotypes that we're finding? And yeah, she found that they do. So people were doing a good job of saying, well, we can look at this plant and tell about what the genotype or biotype is. Of course, there's variation in these morphological characters. So what we've really done is found a little bit better way to describe these plants. I mean, the genotype's not going to vary over the life of the plant. So we know what it is. And we've created a greenhouse collection of all the known genetic diversity in the US. That could be seven plants. And with that, we can do some host specificity of any future agents if this gets revisited, which it may get, because we're not getting control very well with the current agents. And anyone who wanted to do invasion ecology on rush skeleton weed, they would have all the genotypes available to them. And those plants, Mark Schwartzlander's got them at University of Idaho, if anyone wants them. They're easy to propagate clonally, and the seeds are all clonal too. So with this information, we hope to be able to tell people, well, which current agents and which future agents might you want to use in certain areas, especially if you've got different genotypes, multiple genotypes sitting there in one area. You don't want to control one and not control the others, because the non-susceptible ones will just take over anyway. And our next step is exploring for agents, not my work, but looking for things to control our genotypes that are somewhat resistant to the rust and to the mite at this point. And Lynn Kinter in Boise, Idaho, just sent me about 800 plants from Europe. So we'll be looking at that and trying to figure out exact DNA matches with our invasions, with Australia's invasion, and with Argentina's invasion. Argentina has a genotype different from the US and different from Australia also. So now I'm going to go on and talk about a little bit of hybridization. And for that, I want to talk about the work we've been doing on Casuarina, which is a confused thing that likes to look like a gymnosperm, but it's really a flowering plant. And it comes from Florida down here. I've been working with Greg and Gary Taylor and Matt Purcell from Australia. And the story is that you've got three species that come pretty much from Australia invading in Florida. There's an additional unknown type, and when you try and key it out, it doesn't really fall into any of the species that are in the key. And these are the species, Casuarina cunninghamiana, Glauca, and Equisetifolia right there. And what we did was go sampling 341 plants. I only like to collect samples along the beach in Australia, but the other guys went up here where it's hotter and wetter and miserable. So the black is Equisetifolia, the gray is cunninghamiana, and the white is Glauca. That's what we were saying from our morphological descriptions in the field. Also got about 165 plants out of Florida from Greg and other various people. And I did the AFLPs, amplified fragment link polymorphisms, looking at about 210 different loci. So we're looking at a good bit of the DNA on 528 plants. And using sort of a Bayesian modeling program called Structure, it showed that we have seven clusters in these things that we have collected. And what's in those clusters? Well, the first thing it says that Australians know their Casuarina pretty well. Anything they called cunninghamiana pretty much fell in this cluster. Anything they called Glauca was in this cluster. Anything they called Equisetifolia was in here, here, or here, and there's some subspecies for that species anyway. So that makes sense. The only place they blew it was putting some things they called cunninghamiana fell in here, which is actually Casuarina pauper, something we're not too interested in for Florida. I made that mistake too. They look alike, but morphologically, if you look carefully, that's not right. So the real question is, well, what's in Florida? Florida certainly has cunninghamiana with pretty similar matches here. It has Glauca. It's got these Equisetifolia. It doesn't have anything for this cluster and this cluster, but it's got a lot right here in this cluster for which there is nothing from Australia. So are they hybrids? More specifically, are they hybrids between this species, Glauca, and this species, Equisetifolia? And well, you don't always know. If something falls in a cluster in between two things, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a hybrid of those things. So another way to look at it is to look at some diploid markers, and we took 67 plants for sequencing from here, 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 and these groups. And I looked at GP3DH, it's glyceraldehyde 3 phosphate dehydrogenase. This is a low copy nuclear marker. It's diploid, so if you saw some DNA from one parent and another parent, you would expect a heterozygote in the hybrid. Well, I'm really not interested in this species. It doesn't look like it's a huge influence on the invasion from this clustering right here. It doesn't look like it has an influence on the hybrids, so I'll take it out of there. And really, the putative parental taxa are perhaps Glauca and Equisetifolia right here. So I'll leave it. Here's Equisetifolia. Here's Glauca. And a lot of these nucleotides, black means it had an A at that nucleotide, gray is a C, dark gray is a G, white's a T. Well, some of those didn't, like this one, didn't vary between any of the species, so we'll ignore those too. And we'll get down to the nucleotide sites that varied consistently between species. So if you're Equisetifolia, whether you're Australian or Florida, you had a T at this site, 52, and you had a G if you were Glauca. And all the things we thought were hybrids were heterozygotes. It's a diploid, so it had a G and a T. And that was consistent for every site on this marker. Everything that we thought was hybrid was a heterozygotic combination of these two species. So that makes me feel more comfortable that we were really dealing with hybrids. And where are these hybrids found? Well, it wasn't a random search around Florida. I think people were looking for funny looking trees. But these are hybrids with the black, white in the circle, and that's the number of plants they found. And pretty much found throughout quite a bit of Florida, the hybrids are in there, along with the parental species. But why aren't these hybrids in Australia? These two species grow together in Australia. Why would they just be in Florida? Well, one reason, and there could be other reasons, but one reason I think is interesting is if you look at the clusters for Equisetifolia, there's sort of an A cluster, I'll call it, a B cluster, and a C cluster, and these might correlate, at least A and C, with different subspecies. So here's the A cluster of it, and it looks like that's the only thing that's similar between Florida and the Australia for this species. Nothing from Florida is down in these clusters. And when you look on the map, Equisetifolia is the black dots. The A clusters, things from the A cluster are up here, up here, up here next to a black dot. But all of the Equisetifolia on the coast were from the C cluster, which is this lower cluster right there. So why aren't there hybrids in Australia? The reason might be that these Equisetifolia that are from the A cluster are never nearby Glauca, which is the white dot, which only grows on the coast down here. So that could be one reason. Why these other Equisetifolia aren't hybridizing with Glauca, I don't know. But in conclusion, I think we've got the hybrids pretty much identified and the parental types are known. We can pretty much narrow the origins of Equisetifolia in Florida. It would be from these Equisetifolia black dots here, not from these down the coast. And again, the Casuarina study has it's running out of funding from Florida, so it may not really happen. But we have collections of genetic diversity for any host specificity studies if it starts up again, or ecological studies. And now what would be nice is I would like to take this to field identification of the hybrids, because I hate doing AFLPs on a lot of plants and people keep sending me things. So it'd be nicer if they could go in the field and go, oh, that's a hybrid. And here are the species. Here's Glauca and Cunninghamiana and Equisetifolia. They vary in some morphological characteristics, like little number of ridges around here, or how hairy they are along here, or the seed size, the samara size right there. So right now I'm doing the morphological measurements on the last batch and trying to correlate them with the DNA so we can say, oh, and maybe people will be able to say, ah, that's definitely a hybrid in the field, but maybe they won't because there's a lot of plasticity, there's a lot of variation in the hybrids, and they might be back crossing with their parental types a lot. And with that, I got the wave, and it's time for questions, and I don't suggest bonsai and Casuarina. Pete?
In the control work showed the time frame of invasion and then a single frame, a snapshot in the moving picture for the gene effects. What opportunities do we have to reconstruct the history of spread of different genotypes and the projected future mixing of the genotypes in North America?
That's a great question, because some of those genotypes in rush skeleton weed, the chondrilla, are a lot more common than others, and they all have different resistance. I would love to go to herbarium specimens and figure out what genotypes were in certain areas when they first showed up in states, but chondrilla's nasty with latex in it, and I can't do AFLPs unless I have the flowers. And often the collections don't have flowers, or the DNA degrades pretty quickly in the petals. But that's a great question, and I wish I had more access. I should try extracting from petals that are on older herbarium specimens, because we're only talking 30, 20 years at the most. Yeah?
In that same system, it seemed like where the worst populations of the weed were one of the genotypes. Do you think that genotype is ecologically different than the other genotypes there, and you have a sorting and an expansion?
That's a great question. Yeah, is it accidental that everything's coming down, only genotype 3 came down I-5 and got spread through California, or could the others exist there? I've gone nowhere toward that, but that's a great question. And if anyone wants to work with me on that, we could certainly do it.
The skeleton weed in Australia, were you able to link up your genotypes with ones that were rust susceptible?
We're just, Mark Schwartzlander and a student are growing and looking with Dave Atkins in Western Australia, especially looking at their different morphologies. First of all, we have to nail that to their to our genotypes, and we haven't quite yet. But yeah, we want to tie it into who's susceptible and who's not. And we want to do that for the U.S. because it's not totally clear.
The ones in Western Australia are thought not to be rust susceptible, and even the ones in the East, like any biocontrol agent, you wouldn't have thought they'd wipe out all the rust susceptible ones. Anyhow, and some of them are coming back, and it's clear there was some rust insensitive ones that are starting to come back. It'd be interesting to know who's who.
Yeah, and that's our responsibility next is to tie it into who's really susceptible and is it sort of a leaky susceptibility or not. Kicking me out.
I'm sorry, maybe afterwards.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.